that when he gets knocked down, he gets up again. He gets knocked down and he gets up again. And I kind of want to do a Chumbawamba song there. Anyway, you won't know. But and he keeps getting back up. No matter how many times he gets knocked down, he just keeps getting back up. And the Mike's like, well, that's the kind of player we want, isn't it? And the coach is like, nope, that's not the kind of player we want either. We want the player that keeps knocking all these other guys down. You guys saw that one coming, some of you. All right. And I thought that was fitting, though, because some of us, if not all of us, whether you're here or at home or wherever this morning, a lot of us probably have felt like we've been knocked down a little bit lately, whether it's over something at the job or just being home more, or dealing with this or that or the other thing. A lot of us maybe feel like we've gotten knocked down, and we could probably blame, like I said, lots of different guys that knocked us down at this point in our life, but we're feeling like we're finally getting back to something a little bit more normal, right? We've got, you know, opening our doors on Sunday morning, doing some other things that are a little bit more normal maybe. The problem is, and you've heard this at, you know, if you've watched TV or you've been on Facebook or you've done whatever, even just talking on the street, if you've ran at anyone, we're talking about not just going back to normal, we're talking about going back to a new normal and what exactly that looks like and how that works in our world. And so what does that new normal look like? How can we get back to it? And again, we're loosening restrictions. I'm just looking forward to the day where I can just go sit at the cafe or the restaurant and just have a cup of coffee with somebody, right, that I haven't seen for 3 months now or whatever. But, you know, loosening, getting back to that new normal is going to be difficult probably for a lot of us. And for me, most of you probably know, I'm usually pretty good with change, right? I'm willing to do things differently and move forward. The problem is I'm not as good when it's drastic change and change that I really have no control over. Those are the kind of changes that I really struggle with. And so even for me, looking to this new normal is going to be a struggle. And I think we're all going to probably struggle with that to a large extent. But so this morning, I want to focus on what is this new normal going to look like for us? How does that look different than what it was before? And how does it look moving forward? And there's going to be times and parts of this new normal that are going to be put on us, right? As we've already seen, we get a lot put on us, restrictions or guidelines or recommendations or whatever. But we're also going to be able to have an opportunity to make choices in that new normal of what we're deciding to do, how we're going to move forward in that as well, and taking our own responsibility. I'm, again, a big proponent of personal responsibility of how we move forward individually. And so there's three questions that I want to kind of focus on in general this morning. And hopefully we can read them. The people at home have an advantage. Their screen is a lot clearer than ours is here. But three questions that I want to think about as we work through this new normal and moving into this new normal. The first one is what have I learned in this whole process and where we're at and where we're moving? Asking the question, what have I learned? The second one is how, what can I carry forward? What can I carry forward? Of all these things, maybe those relationships need to be looked at and figure out how can we move forward knowing that where we're at that way. Maybe it's, again, something dynamically as far as physically. You realize physically you need something different and to do changes and those kind of things. And so hopefully as we've learned something over the last several months, we have something we can move forward with. And I'm going to focus again as we get towards the end on finances and the situation we face, because I think as a culture, in our community, in our area, we haven't been hit financially as hard as other areas. My worry is that we may yet still. And so I want to bring up some of those things as we move forward. I also want to point out that this morning what I borrowed a lot from a message that Andy Stanley gave a few weeks ago. And so if there's things that rhyme or really good questions in it, they're Andy's, not mine. But I tried to bring this so that it made sense for our context and our culture. And you'll hear that it's definitely Matt's sermon and not Andy's as we move through here. But the first thing to keep in mind, again, coming from Andy as well, is this phrase, this idea that pain without gain is a shame. And again, I'm not that clever, so that can rhyme that well. But pain without gain is a shame, and that's so true, right? That if we have pain, if we don't do something, if there's not something positive from it, then it is just a waste, right? It's just not really worth the pain that we went through. And that's really, again, my hope as we walk through all of these things and get to a different place in where we're at. And when we think about those things and we think about the growth that we can have, C.S. Lewis actually does a really good job in his book, The Problem of Pain. And if you haven't ever read, I hope everybody's read C.S. Lewis, at least his maybe Chronicles of Narnia or one of his kids' books, because he just uses imagery so well. And even in The Problem of Pain, where he kind of walks through the issues and the struggle of when we have pain in our life, and even the necessity, he says, as I would say, the necessity of pain in our lives, He reveals to us these things, these images and these word choices that are beautiful and really can be powerful, but sometimes some of the words get lost in the translation as well, and it's hard to maybe pull everything out. But so I want to use an extensive quote from C.S. Lewis's Problem of Pain in order for us to kind of understand where he's coming from, because I think there's so much truth in what he has to say. And so he begins, he says, or in his book he says this, he says, as I am processing along the path of life, in my ordinary, contentedly fallen and godless condition, he absorbed in merry meeting with friends for the morrow, like at the grill downtown or down the street, or a bit of work that tickles my vanity today, or a holiday or a new book, when suddenly a stab of pain, of abdominal pain that threatens serious disease, or a headline in a newspaper that threatens us all with destruction, sends this whole pack of cards tumbling down. And I think that's so true, right? We go through life and we do this and that and the other thing, and we just kind of walk through, and we find bits of happiness and joy in our world. But then all of a sudden something bad happens. We get, like he says, abdominal pain and some kind of disease. We see a headline of riots or you know, terrible destruction, and all of a sudden our world starts, we start to question and doubt and wonder, and things start to fall apart pretty quickly. And C.S. Lewis continues. He says this is what he does. He says, at first I'm overwhelmed, and all my little happinesses look like broken toys. Then slowly, reluctantly, bit by bit, I try to bring myself into the frame of mind that really I should be at all times. I remind myself that all these toys were never meant to possess my heart, and my true good is another world. And my true good is in another world, and my only real treasure is Christ. And so he says, I get to, he refocuses, right? He gets a new perspective when all these things happen. And he starts to focus on, like he says, the things that he should have already been focusing on. And realizes that these toys, these little things that brought him happiness, even the, you know, the mundane things, weren't really supposed to be what possessed his heart. And the real treasure, he says, is Christ. He continues, he says, perhaps by God's grace, I succeed. And for a day or two, become a creature consciously dependent on God and drawing its strength from the right sources. But the moment the thread is withdrawn, my whole nature leaps back to those toys. And I think that's all of us, right? That's certainly me, that we start jumping back, right? For a day or two, we start to do things differently, right? Something happens at work and the boss says, let's do this differently, or I see this and you're having a hard time with this. And for a couple days, right, we work really hard, we try to please that person or do things differently, and we try to get right and focused and everything like that, but then it doesn't take very long, he says, to start to look back to those toys, to those things that distract us, those things that we don't necessarily need in our life, that we look to bring us joy and happiness and things in our heart. But he expands on that again. He says this even more. He says, thus, the terrible necessity of tribulation, some kind of pain or hurt, the terrible necessity of that pain is only too clear. God has had me for about 48 hours, and then only by dint of taking everything away from me. Let him then but sheath that sword for a moment, and I behave like a puppy when that hated bath is over. And if you have a dog, you probably understand this better. Understand, I behave like a puppy. When the hated bath is over, I shake myself as dry as I can, and I race off to reacquire my comfortable dirtiness. If not in the nearest manure pile, at least in the nearest flower bed. And that is why tribulation cannot cease until God either sees us remade or sees that our remaking is now hopeless. I don't know, I think that's powerful enough as it is. Let's just pray and we'll just go home today. So, no, it's a little too early for that. So, right, he says when this tribulation, this pain, this hurt pushes us to the point where we make those changes, and then when he puts that pain away or that takes that pain away or that pain is changed, then all of a sudden we change our mentality again, and we're like that puppy, and I just love that image, right? And I haven't had a dog for a long time, but yeah, and I don't think I've ever given a dog a bath, probably. We had outside dogs. You don't bathe when they're bathe outside dogs. But I can just imagine, right? They shake that water off and they're running as fast as they can to get dirty again, right? Not maybe on purpose, but that's just kind of seems what happened. I have that experience with kids. Well, I can correlate that with kids, so we'll do it that way. I did that. I gave them baths last night, and I couldn't find the younger two, and all of a sudden I go outside, and they're running around in the grass and all over the place. I said, you're clean. Stay inside. Anyway. But again, we are like that puppy. Spiritually, emotionally, relationally, even physically, we do things well for a while. That's why we're terrible at New Year's resolutions. That's why I stopped doing New Year's resolutions, because I just got depressed by the end of January. And so, right, we have that attitude where things go well for a while, but then we forget about it and we fall back into our same pattern, our old normal, which is what we want to move away from, I think especially at this season. And so it takes self-control, right? And we all know that. It takes self-control, a change in our what we're focused on or whatever it is, but it takes self-control to make these changes, but it also takes a whole lot of Jesus. And I really feel that's so important to not push aside by any means, right? Part of our choice and our self-control, part of that choice is also choosing how is God going to come in and fix and fill that void that we're trying to fill with all these other toys and all these other things that we put into our world. And so that being said, Proverbs 25:28 says, a man without self-control is like a city into which it broken into and left without walls. A man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. And we don't have walls built around our city. Probably at the beginning of this virus, if we had built walls around the city, we'd be maybe, I don't know, we'd be fit better maybe. But we could. I think we can understand and appreciate that imagery. If we think back in the time where there's a lot of unrest, where nations and even cities and other people were coming and constantly moving around, constantly trying to conquer each other, and take power and authority over different places, walled cities were essential, especially the walled cities that were self-sustaining and self-sufficient, that basically could live within their walls on their own for almost an indefinite period of time. And so especially thinking of Jerusalem, where Solomon is here and having that huge walled city, he understands that protection, the safety that provides, and even an assurance, and even the autonomy, I think that's such an important word here, the autonomy, the ability to make their own choices is such an important part. And so when self-control, as he says here in the proverb, is that self-control is given up, as we lose that self-control, we start to lose the same things that a walled city loses when their walls are broken down. They start to have less autonomy, right? There's more other people that can come in and control that city and do different things in that city. There's fear that can be easily brought into it. There's disgrace and even a sense of defeat. That as that walled city is able to be overrun easily by its enemies or by even thieves and robbers, our self-control allows us to keep some of those things at bay, and especially that autonomy. So we give those things away, the less and less we have control over those things in our world. And so thinking of those things and that imagery of that walled city, we realize that when we make those choices, especially as we think about the financial choices, but relational ones and physical ones and other ones as well, especially as we make financial choices, the more and more, the less and less self-control we have, really the less and less choice we have, right? And we know this really well. When we have more debt, when we have more, especially credit card or unnecessary debt, the more and more we have of that, the less and less we have of our own resources and our own money and our own control of our life. Right, if we've got a house payment, a mortgage on top of a car payment, and then we have credit card debt, and we have all these things that just pile up. All of a sudden, at the end of the month, once we pay all of those bills, we're not left with nearly as much because we don't have the self-control that we maybe need. Whereas, if we control our expenses and we set a budget and we do all these things, in fact. In this message, Andy reminded me that we're supposed to have 3 to 6 months in savings. I'd ask for a raise of hand, but I think we'd be disappointed if I asked how many had 3 to 6 months in savings. I may have a week in savings. I was thinking about this earlier. I don't know if my parents are going to watch this, but my 3 to 6 months in savings is a phone call to my parents if I really need something. So they may not watch. Hopefully they won't watch this. They know that already, though. All right, so thinking about that, right, that control that we have, we lose more and more control the more and more we give and don't control our choices, especially thinking long term. And so that brings up a couple more questions that I think are well worth asking here. Three quick questions that I just want to throw out there here is, what have I been doing? What have I been doing that almost led to my undoing? And again, we're probably, I don't know if we've been hit financially, at least people that I've talked to and heard. In fact, I run the Salvation Army. I haven't had someone ask for resources from the Salvation Army, I don't think, through this whole situation. And so our area, I think, could still easily be hit by this. And so thinking about what are the things that almost led to our undoing, I don't know if anyone's here this morning that has that situation, but it's very possible that that's still in our future. It could happen to me in the future. Is the choices that I've made, the decisions that I've made, the bills that I have, is that going to lead to me running into strong or heavy financial debt? We also ask the question, what should I have been doing that I have not been doing? We see ourselves in a situation of financial circumstance or you know, wherever we're at, and we haven't been doing what we thought we should, what we probably should have been doing. 3 to 6 months in savings, right? 3 to 6 months of expenses and savings and those kind of things. And especially financially, is moving forward, is how can we be better? How can I be better for it financially, moving forward? How can I make choices filled with self-control but also filled with God to know how to move forward in this well? And to give us some perspective on this, I just want to read a little bit more from King Solomon. And jumping to Ecclesiastes 5, actually we're going to go to Ecclesiastes 2 first to give us some perspective. But in Ecclesiastes 5, Solomon just gives us some very simple wisdom. Very simple truth. But before we get to that, I want to read a little bit from Ecclesiastes, or just gloss over Ecclesiastes 2, because that gives us a perspective of where Solomon's at, right? Solomon's not just a regular Joe sitting in the streets writing this stuff out, right? He's gone through things and he's had some experience with this. And so he says this in Ecclesiastes 2, verses 3 through 8. He says, I searched with all my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the days of his life, the few days of his life. He said, I made good works. I built houses, planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens, parks, planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forests of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, had slaves that were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver, gold, treasures of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, many concubines, the delight of the sons of man. Right? This isn't just some poor Joe sitting on the street. This is King Solomon at that time in the world, probably the wealthiest man ever to live. And he pursued these things. He sought after these things. He developed this massive wealth in gold and silver, he says, and in animals and herds and flocks. But then in Ecclesiastes 5, just a few chapters later, 10 through 11, he says, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. And what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? Andy Stanley often says it's better to want something you don't need than to owe something you don't need. That's not quite right, I don't think. It's better to want something you don't need than to owe on something. There you go. Owe on something you don't need. And all of us probably could say, I've got lots of things I don't need. Lots and lots of things. I can certainly say that. In fact, over the last several months, I've had a lot more personal financial freedom. And so I get to make choices without having to worry about, you know, other voices too much. You know, I have five little voices that, you know, complain if, you know, I'm having ice cream and they're not. But I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. So it becomes hard to say, oh, I want that. I want to do that. I want to get that. But it is so much better to have that tension of wanting something than to owe money on something that you own. Right? And I think we can all say, I've gone out and, you know, oh, I shouldn't have bought that, right? And now I have to owe money, especially if it's something on the, you know, on a credit card or something that we owe for something. That tension of want versus owe is such an important tension for us in our world, of finding that balance between, yeah, I can buy it and I can get it and I, you know, it'd be great to have, but then what are the long-term consequences, the long-term problems that maybe would come with that? And so finding that balance, finding and fitting into that tension helps us to move forward, especially when we have that self-control. And sometimes it does help to have other voices and other things that are in our world to help us manage that. And I have to have certain guidelines and structures for myself to be able to, you know, limit that as well. And I hope you have those as well. But budgets and different other things that help us move forward in those kind of financial situations. But in so many ways, we pursue things. We pursue a variety of things in our world. And at the end, is that really where we want to be? And is that really what we want to have? And so if we felt pressure over the last several months, whether it's financial pressure, whether it's a relational pressure or situation, whether it's a physical pressure or pain or hurt or something else that we can fit into that category, if there's something that we've struggled with over the last couple months, I really strongly encourage you to step back and say, okay, where am I at and how do I move forward from this? How can I take what I've learned? How can I take this tension and this pain and this hurt? What have I pursued for maybe all of my life? That all of a sudden when things are rough, when things are hard, when I can't work, when there's, you know, the unemployment line is, you know, I can't even get unemployment because it's so crazy right now and all these kinds of things. When we get to that point, is there a way we can step back and say, okay, I've done it this way my whole life. Why don't I do things different? How can I do things different? How can I ultimately, like the sermon says, be better for it? And we, again, like King Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 5, we can pursue money just as well as we can pursue anything else. But at the end, is it going to bring us what we want? And Andy Stanley says this as well. He says, a financial hole is due in part to a lack of self-control. Again, I can't rhyme that well. So a financial hole is due at least in part to a lack of self-control. And that could be true for so many things. A lack of control could, a lack of, or a relational hole, a physical hole, an emotional or a spiritual hole could be a lack of self-control. And so what is our part? How do we own our slice of the financial, of the relational, of the spiritual pie? Yes, we can blame and we can easily point fingers. Well, the governor wouldn't let me work. Or, you know, this economic situation is horrible. My boss, you know, fired me or laid me off, or all these kinds of choices and pointing fingers that we can do. We all still have a choice in that. We all still have a responsibility to take control of where we're at and how we're going to move forward. And so as we close our time this morning, I really hope there's something in your life, that's maybe a bad way to say it, I hope there's something terrible in your life to make you think about, no, that's not right. I hope there's something in your life that you've learned over the last couple months that you can look back and you can say, okay, this is why I'm in this situation, this is why I'm struggling here, this is why this is going on. And instead of pointing fingers and blaming the outside circumstances, stepping back and saying, okay, what is my part of all this situation? And how can I take what I've learned, carry it forward, and ultimately at the end be better for it? Because like Andy says, pain without gain is such a shame. And I really would hate for us to step into this new normal, holding on to all this baggage and all this stuff that we carry with us, to not do something different, to not move into something better. And so my prayer is for us to do that well, for myself to do that as well, and to find ways to not let this go to waste. Let's pray. Gracious Father, we again just are so thankful that you can provide for us, that you can lift us up, and we know that you can miraculously bring us out of circumstances and situations, and we pray for that. But we also pray that we're not that puppy, that after we get washed and clean, that we shake ourselves dry and we run back into the mess. I pray, Lord, that we take what we've learned, we take our circumstances and our situations, and we can take them and carry them forward well, so that we can come into a new normal and be better for it. Pray for your spirit and your guidance and a whole lot of Jesus moving forward. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Worship team. We're going to go ahead and close this morning. Since we've got a group, we're going to go ahead and do our invitation hymn. I'll allow you to stay 6 feet away from me if you decide to come up, but just an opportunity for you to respond. And I, you know, if you feel comfortable and need to come up and need prayer or would like prayer or whatever, you're more than welcome to. And the reason I wanted to do our invitation this morning, though, is just for you to maybe even respond where you're at, to take a moment as we sing to say, okay, this is where I'm at, this is what I need to think about and move forward. So we are better for it. So if you're able and willing, can you stand as we sing, "I Surrender All"? It's not awkward. We're not going to do a closing song. You guys have a good day. God bless.